As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
What's up? What's going on? Welcome back to Spin Rate. My name is Drew Fairservice, and this is the midweek edition of Spin Rate, the Athletics Blue Jays podcast. We've got a lot to talk about this week. Obviously, a lot going on with the Blue Jays, just wrapping up this mini-series in Boston. Offense kind of struggling. Defense kind of letting them down. Pitching actually, you know, kind of stepping up to the plate a little bit. So this week, I think it's important that we talk to someone who can really help us drill down, figure out, and understand what is going on with your Toronto Blue Jays, and also what will be going on, and what can we look forward to, not only with the Blue Jays, but around baseball itself. I'm excited to talk to, of The Athletic, Eno Saris. You know him well. I've been talking to Eno on podcasts for better part of a decade now, and he's always a great guest. We always have a great time. And I'm really excited to chat with him about the balls that they're using in the big leagues these days, about the junk they're putting on the balls, and all about all the Blue Jays kind of storylines and the big stuff that's coming up for your Toronto Blue Jays. So if you want to read Eno, put out a big story with Ken Rosenthal here in the early parts of this week, you got to go to theathletic.com/spinrate. Got to subscribe to The Athletic. Get all everything that Caitlin writes, everything that Eno writes, everything that Ken Rosenthal writes, Jason Stark wrote about the Blue Jays this week. So much for you out there. Make sure you go and subscribe to that and subscribe to this show. Subscribe to Spin Rate wherever you get your podcasts. If it's on Apple Podcasts, if it's on Spotify, if it's on Overcast or Stitcher, wherever. Look for Spin Rate. Subscribe. Hit us with a like. Hit us with a rating. With a thumbs up. Whatever it takes. Whatever it takes is what I need you to do. I was trying to think about the Super League. Somebody was asking me on Twitter if I can explain Super League in baseball terms. Super League was a big story in Europe this week, where some of the biggest clubs in the world kind of formed a bit of a breakaway republic. They were going to run their own league, which it's a really odd concept because it doesn't really work over here. I know that there's a lot of people that love to talk about promotion and relegation in North American sports, as they do in the top English and you know worldwide soccer leagues. I was thinking about it. I was talking with someone about it online. The problem with that, you can't do it in baseball. It doesn't work. The farm systems are owned by the parent teams. The Blue Jays decide who goes on the Buffalo Bisons. That's not going to allow them to then some, you know, one year by chance compete head to head. But the best thing I could describe as of the Super League is kind of as if the Red Sox, Yankees, Cubs, and Dodgers decided they needed to play in their own separate league where they didn't need to share quite as much of the money that their television eyeballs generate with the Pirates and the Marlins and whoever else. Maybe you could include the some other big baseball teams like the Yomiuri Giants. Maybe you want to include the Doosan Bears from Korea, but I don't know. That's not a great analogy, but basically it's that those teams are a little bit tired of sharing the pie, but then it fell apart. And it's so exciting in some ways to see direct action by fans and direct action by people producing real world results. And on top of that, you know, Maybe sports is the first place, is the first vanguard for that kind of stuff, where we can see the results of what happens when people may take direct action, when they let important and moneyed and rich and powerful people know that they don't get to just run over the little people, the regular people, the people who are at the mercy of their whims. It'd be great to see that extend beyond sports. Let's use sports as a little test. We can test things out in sports. And baseball keeps floating these trial balloons. And how great would it be to see fans mobilize and organize and maybe take a step against some of the stuff that these changes that are coming that don't necessarily benefit fans, don't benefit the game, maybe just benefit the TV rights holders, whatever it is. North American sports fans, most of us, we're not really wired that way, but I think it might be a good little test to then take it into the larger society when maybe we have a chance to, you know, fingers crossed, make things a little bit better. But anyway, without any further ado, we're going to talk to Eno Saris of The Athletic and have a great time doing it on this week's edition of Spin Rate. All right, as mentioned before, it is my pleasure this time to be joined by The Athletic's own Eno Saris. Eno, thank you so much for taking the time and joining me today.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me on. And sorry that we missed connection a little bit. It's a little bit crazy here. Got a newborn, a five-day-old in the house, my new nephew. And that boy cries a lot.
Well, congratulations to you and your family. And that is difficult, especially if it's not your kid, it probably gets a little bit more challenging at times.
It's more difficult because with your kid, you're just like, you're all in, right? You're just like, okay, baby, amazing. You know, when it's someone else's, you're just like, can you go somewhere else?
I don't.
Can you get him to stop crying?
I don't particularly remember signing up for this at this juncture.
Exactly.
But I'm sure it's for a good reason, and I'm sure that it's that everybody parents all are very appreciative of having that extra support around. So
yeah,
you're taking one for the team, and we appreciate you taking the time out of a busy newborn filled life to discuss
a behemoth.
To discuss a lot of things. new babies, big league baseball has two different things that are new for the league itself. Number one, maybe they got a new ball. And number two, they got a new challenge trying to control what the hell people put on the ball. So let's start with the shit on the ball story that you, I believe that was the headline there on The Athletic with you and Ken Rosenthal, talked about how this is evolved beyond just the kind of quasi-innocent, you know, a little bit of rosin, a little bit of sunscreen into something that's an ongoing concern around the league.
Yeah, it's getting to a point where, you know, I've reported that, you know, like 80% of the league is doing something, you know, putting a sticky substance on their fingers to increase their grip or actually to increase their RPM, their spin rate on the pitch, which increases the movement on the pitch, which makes the stuff better. And a couple of revelations that were recent, which one was that it increases breaking ball stuff more than fastball stuff. So I'd done a study and it showed that it increased fastball stuff by 10%, basically could turn Michael Pineda's fastball into Trevor Bauer's, you know, just by using sticky stuff, which is a kind of ironic couple of players to highlight, but in any case, that does happen. But I've talked to other people since, and they said, "Dude, it's much worse. It's much bigger of a boon for breaking balls. It increases breaking ball stuff by about 30%." So you put that together with the rising strikeout rate, the rising use of breaking balls, the breaking balls that we're seeing today that we never saw before. Like, think about Jacob deGrom's, and I'm not trying to point at fingers at anybody, but just think about Jacob deGrom's 94-mile-an-hour slider. You know what I mean? Think about some of the other crazy, super hard, super bendy breaking balls we're seeing today. I think those are kind of new pitches. Like, I don't think that we're struggling to even name them. You know, is it a slutter? You know, is it like a, was it like a power slider? Is it a, you know, so like, you know, I think that is part from, having the ability to put stuff on your fingers in front of a machine that'll tell you exactly how many RPM you've just added by the stuff you put on your fingers.
Well, the RPM thing is huge, I think, because, you know, so many of us are seeing, I mean, the Blue Jays pitching brain trust is known for, just like many others, being able to kind of identify somebody who, if they've got a high spin curve or a high spin fastball, really putting it to work. But for me, I think about if so many of these guys are putting, adding even extra spin to their fastball, and they're also high velocity guys. I mean, it's already hard enough to hit a baseball. Now, if it's a, you know, I'm thinking of that guy, Josh Stamat, that pitched for the Royals against the Blue Jays, you know, this past weekend, who's got like crazy stuff, but still has like really high spin rates. When you put those things together, it makes the proposition of trying to hit big league pitching even more daunting than before.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, baseball's looking for a way to reduce strikeout rate. And so, you know, this could be a way to do it. You know, you're talking about moving the mound and, you know, not like seriously, but people have talked about like changing what it takes to strike out, four strikes, or like, you know, like changing the number of strikes and balls. But we're literally talking about a pitch clock, moving the mound, changing the zone, doing robot umps, all these things to maybe, you know, get more balls in play. And there's one right in front of us that's in the rule book. And so today the piece was a little bit about the fact that I'd previously thought maybe it's impossible to do this because sunscreen and rosin, that's always the Red Sox one. You know, I think people remember Clay Buchholz with the shiny arms, you know, and how the Red Sox had the bullfrog and rosin going. And I thought, you know, you can't ban bullfrog. You can't ban sunscreen. You know, there'd be some serious ramifications for that. So, you know, like putting them in skin cancer, more dangerous skin cancer. That doesn't work that way. So I thought that was a big deal, but when I actually looked and did the study, there's a huge difference between sunscreen and rosin, which gives you like a tiny benefit, maybe some grip, but not a really big deal. And the stuff they're using now, which you can attach your hand to a cinder block, using just the tack. I mean, there's a picture in that piece where you're just like, what?
Like, this is pure possible? Like infomercial, middle of the night, order it from some kind of like morally ambiguous figure somewhere exactly. In like a disputed zone. But I guess the question is, and I know that the piece touches on this, where the league is kind of looking for repeat examples, like someone who's brazenly breaking the rules. They've got a large sample size, as they might say, of balls that they're able to use to build a case to be like, this is something that you're doing repeatedly. But again, it seems to me like it would be really difficult to pin it down.
Yeah, because you know, there's an infamous picture of Yadi Molina with the ball stuck to his chest protector. So I feel like if I was a pitcher and, you know, I was looking to cast doubt on, you know, any suspension that might cost me millions of dollars, of like a lot of dollars, you know, I would say, you know, well, are you sure that my catcher didn't touch it? You know, are you sure it didn't just pick it up, you know, on the ground or something? And so, yes, you can kind of like maybe use video to be like, okay, here's a ball you threw. Catcher didn't really touch it, but the catcher's going to touch every ball, you know? So like, what if there's just like some around his mitt or something? So it's kind of difficult. However, by identifying the fact that sunscreen is one substance, right? And then pine tar is another. And then there's a stuff called spider tack, which, you know, if you could find some spider tack, they'd be like, well, there's no reason for the catcher to have spider tack on him. mm-hmm. So I think if you're going to give baseball the benefit of the doubt, which but if you're going to give baseball the benefit of the doubt, I think what you say is they're gathering information and they want to see how much stuff pops on their, you know, when they send it to the lab, how much ridiculous stuff is out there, how many people are doing the ridiculous stuff and how many people are doing just a little bit of pine tar and how many people are doing the sunscreen and rosin. And once they have a sense of how big a problem it is, but you talk to people inside the game and people who are shepherds of the game, people who are, you know, high up in baseball's, you know, they care and they know it matters.
But it also feels like it's a little bit of a mutually assured destruction at this point, because the sort of thing where nobody wants to point the finger at the other team because they know their own guys are doing all the same sort of stuff. And so maybe it takes, you know, a Mike Fiers, and maybe there needs to be some kind of like a whistleblower of type.
Some hitters that might want to step up, but then you got sort of hitters versus pitchers, right? Mm-hmm. It almost takes like a pitcher. And in terms of a whistleblowing pitcher, like Trevor Bauer kind of tried to be that. You know, he told us, he told us all, hey, look at my spin rates in the first inning the other day. That was about 2 years ago. And then when that didn't matter, I guess he kind of joined up. But I would say there's also mutually destruction between baseball proper and the union on this one, because they're also stepping to the plate to talk about the CBA right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just now starting to negotiate the CBA. So, like, does baseball really want to get some bad blood, like just really, you know, like just to,
is this
really
the line in the sand? Is this worth drawing a line in the sand?
Yeah. Like, do they want to kick over the hornet's nest about this issue and start like a big battle in court maybe, or in front of the arbitrators about whether or not these people touch these balls? And, you know, do you want to start that whole thing right now, or maybe gather information this year and wait till there's a CBA in place and then maybe try something later? But and it's also kind of feels like something that's super insider baseball. So, like, I'm not getting the feeling from my views or my reads or my Twitter feed that people care that much about this issue.
I think it's because it's so widespread, and again, I feel like unless you have that inside baseball view, it's hard to determine where, like, the superhuman feats that we're seeing on a regular basis anyway stop and this performance enhancement begins. Because, again, you know, while whomever it is, if it's Nate Pearson, if it's anybody who's throwing 98, 99, 102, when we see guys like Ryan Barucki, who's pitching, you know, for the Blue Jays, where as a starter is 93, let's put that time in, he goes up to 97, and it's like, well, you know, that's awesome. A, it's fun to watch. It's fun to see the score, the radar gun light up. But it's like, where do we draw that line? And again, I think, you know, not to downplay the work, but the fans are like, hey, it works for us. You know, our guy's striking everybody out. Yeah, so I'm not about to say no.
I like our pitching ninja, you know, our pitching ninja clips.
So. Yeah, exactly. I'll retweet all those, but then when it's somebody else, I'm pointing the finger and casting aspersions.
Right.
We'll be right back with more Spin Rate, but first, check this out.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep. You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Another thing we were talking about, one thing baseball has done, which has been to make some changes to the ball. What did you find about changes to the ball? I know that there are a few players that Blue Jays fans were a little wary of. Somebody who, you know, like Kevin Biggio, for example, who had quite a few like just enough style home runs. Mm-hmm. But what have the early returns been on the new ball here in the big leagues?
Yeah, there was some research that was updated that was in that piece. So I'll just simplify to what I know to be true, which I think is this. They made the ball deader inside, but they also made it lighter. And by making it lighter, velocity's up across the league. So I think that's just, you know, it's a lighter ball. It's easier to throw. And exit velocities are up. Barrel rates are up. So, like, they're hitting the ball harder despite the fact that it was supposed to be deadened. And so even though there's these arrows in different directions, we're going to end up in a lot of the same place. Which seems unfortunate because the ball, like the sticky substance, I feel like the ball could be a way to manipulate the game. Like if they were good at it, you know what I mean, if they were good at manipulating the ball and doing the right things with the ball, I think they could, like if they made the ball heavier, you could reduce velocity. Velocity is a big source of strikeout rates, right? Mm-hmm. Make the ball, instead of making the ball, they made the ball as much lighter as they could without getting the rules committee involved. Like they said, it's 1/10 of an ounce. Well, 1/10 of an ounce is almost 3 grams. A 3 gram change is significant. If you're looking at weighted balls and you're doing a weighted ball thing, there are balls that are about 3 to 5 grams difference. So like this is it's a major thing.
For
so
sure.
Instead of making it lighter, make it heavier, reduce velocities around mm-hmm. the game, reduce home runs. I mean, I think the trick is that they don't want to reduce home runs. They just want to reduce strikeouts. That's what they're trying to kind of fiddle around with things.
I feel like whenever they're trying to do that kind of internal calculus, it's the increase of home runs is the thing that I always come back to. Like, oh, we'll move the mound back. And it's like, then it's just going to be one home run after another. Everybody in the really league be, is so strong. They're all so geared up. Everybody's generating crazy bat speed. They spend all winter long, you know, perfecting their swing. There's so much talent that I think that I would agree with you that the ball might be the way to sort of, you know, fine tune and do things that don't necessarily, you know, overly advantage hitters versus pitchers versus not versus fans, but with fans being included. Yeah. And I still want to have an entertaining product and see the ball in play and see guys moving around the bases. But at the same time, you don't want it to just go from one way to the other. And I don't think doing nothing is an option either.
Yeah, I you know, if you go to a game, going to a game is very different than watching on TV. Watching on TV, I think a strikeout can be compelling, right? Mm-hmm. Because you can see the bend, you can see the location, you get the great view, right? And you're like, whoa, that was a nasty pitch. At the game, though, especially like in 80% of the seats, like you barely know what the pitch type was. You definitely don't know where in the strike zone it was. The strikeout is just a strikeout for the most part, right?
True. That's
you might
point.
Look up on the board and be like, "Ooh, threw 99, right?" Or something, or 100. You know, then you might. But that's about it. So what I've noticed is like people are on their phones a fair amount of games. I'm not shaming fans. Like mm-hmm. baseball is a little bit more of a, you know, hang out all day kind of thing, you know, where it's okay to look at your phone or talk to your friends or whatever. You know, I don't shame fans for that. But what I'm saying is they look up when you hear the crack of the bat.
Yeah.
So I do think like mm-hmm. balls in play sort of arrest, they get our attention. And Jeff Samardzija once said to me, people pay for us to, you know, knock the ball around, throw the ball around and fall down. And he was talking about like sort of balls in play, you know, they want to see action. Mm. And so I think that balls in play is a thing to try and get. And the other way of doing it, I think is very interesting is, and I'm not saying that robo umps are perfect. And I hear people that don't like robo umps, but if you do have robo umps, you can be very precise about the strike zone. And so if you can be very precise about the strike zone and you can be more precise about the ball, you could do these little things that change the ball a little bit and change the strike zone a little bit to get what you want. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it's a lot easier to do that than to tell, okay, umpires, you got to call above the knee instead of below the knee. Well, mm-hmm. how many years is that going to take until like it's normal, right?
Well, and it's still, and you know, while I am someone who likes the judgment call aspect of it, I really do. I like that. Just kind of
you're like yelling about it, or
no? I like that. I just like that. It's something that is
chaos.
You need to something that I we all need to accept at times. And if the strike zone is consistent, then I think it's just something that you can accept and then work to. So the other night, Hyunjin Ryu was facing the Blue Jays, and I can't remember the umpire's name. Umpire was giving a pretty good outside corner to righties. And mm-hmm. and I'm thinking if Ryu is able to get that same corner, that's going to be a really, you know, competitive advantage.
That's an element, it's a strategy. That's a way to win. That's strategy.
Exactly. Now, of course, he didn't have his best stuff and didn't, and you know, had a bit of a rocky outing. But to me, I like that piece of it. But I do agree that you can't just tell an umpire like tighten up the zone because it's still a judgment call. Yeah. And I feel like when umpires are almost going to maybe skew a little bit larger in terms of the strike zone. But you know, in the interest of kind of maybe looking to improve and make the game continue to be compelling for people who aren't already, you know, too far gone like us, you know, if we're trying to bring the next group of people around, if that's what it takes, then that's what it takes. And I don't know that I would, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily love it, but I would probably be okay.
Do you watch some basketball? Do you watch some basketball?
I love basketball.
I personally think basketball is a better product now than before.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree. I think that the caliber of the play, the quality of the players, the shooting, all that stuff is great. I think that in my mind, they should remove the corner three a little bit because there are players like Blake Griffin, for example.
3-and-D guys that just camp out there.
Or just even a player like Blake Griffin or guys even like LaMarcus Aldridge, who just retired the other week. Like the game has moved past guys like that. And I think it's a little bit of a shame because that three pointer in the corner is too easy for the NBA players. And while I agree that the quality of the game is through the roof and the skills and the athleticism.
Also seems like a possible thing they could change. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
Like when we talk about these things in baseball, it seems like, oh, they'll never do that. Or, oh, that's too big of a deal. Or we can't do that. But in basketball, they're just like, no, we're, you know, now you can't. And they seem to do smaller things, you know, like it was like, I think the hand check thing was the real big difference maker. You know, they were just you can't really hand check a guy on the perimeter anymore. Boom. How much changed?
The hand check thing, the zone defense, and then even like the perimeter circle. Like they say you can't take a charge if you're closer to the basket than this. They drew a line on the court that didn't used to be there, and now it's just something that's part of the game.
I think it's better for the game, yeah.
And Kyle Lowry still manages to take two charges a game, like a true hero. So we talked about the new ball. We talked about the new stuff that people are putting on the ball. Let's talk about some new and improved versions of some folks that we're seeing, especially from a Toronto Blue Jay perspective. Can't start anywhere better than Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who gets a lot of run on this podcast, but I don't think anyone else would deserve it more. I know before the season, you co-wrote a piece with my co-host, Caitlin McGrath, about something that you wanted to see Vlad do a lot more, and it was hit the ball in the air, which, simple enough. I mean, you made a great point, one that I've made myself, that Vlad doesn't really, you know, he takes his walks, doesn't really strike out. You know, those are such key elements already. Like he's already really good.
Yeah.
And then now we're seeing him hit the ball in the air. We're seeing him drive the ball and we're seeing him be even more selective and striking out even less. I don't know what you think. You probably don't watch him quite as closely, but it's been a really, 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 I mean, the guy's got a 500 on base percentage. It's been an encouraging start to the season. So.
Yeah. No, and like, you know, I you couldn't draw it up any better. I mean, he's 22, it's his third year, and he's done what he needs to do. He's improved his play discipline to where it's elite. He's retained his contact ability, and now he's hitting the ball in the air. I mean, you couldn't draw it up better. The only thing that's you kind of wish he was still at third or something, but you can have a superstar first baseman, you know? And honestly, I don't think this is one... The skill set combination is not super common. I mean, it's not like Juan Soto to me is in the kind of Miguel Cabrera vein, right? Excellent opposite field power, excellent eye. Vlad has better contact rates than some of those groupings. You know what I mean?
I think that you'll never see Vlad post a walk rate like you see from Soto because Vlad and to his detriment previously, but I think it's working much better for him now. He puts the ball in play too much, right? He has such good bat to ball skills that he doesn't quite get himself into those walk situations. What I've seen is he is walking a ton, and more than that, he's in hitters counts like every single time up. So you'll see what I've been saying is you'll see a lot of swing and miss from him, but that's because he's 2-0 and 3-1 and just bombs away. And he's happy to guess because he's not afraid to hit 2-2. He's not afraid to have the count run even. But I don't think you'll ever see those big walk rates. But I think everything else, and I watched an interesting video about how much his fitness has allowed him to like really bring the get his back half in a much better position and really take advantage of that crazy bat speed that he's always had. And it's been great. It's been great to watch.
I'm looking sort of like what I'm trying to find here. Like, you know, Hank Aaron played in a different era, but he has that sort of thing where he made a ton of contact and just and walked a decent amount, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And had a bunch of power like that. That's an interesting sort of icon to compare him to. He'll have to have the longevity to really do it. Alex Rodriguez is a more modern guy who for his career struck out 11%. I mean, walked 11% of the time and struck out 19%. Mm-hmm. That seems a little bit, that seems close to what Vlad could do, but Vlad might strike out less than that, you know?
Yeah.
So it's an interesting set of skills that that in the modern era, I guess Albert Pujols, but he strikes out a little bit more than Pujols, but maybe like Pujols a little bit. It's not, it's just not exactly the same.
But it's crazy that these are the guys we're comparing to, you know, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who's got what, like 40 career home runs and like.
But I believe I'm totally in the tank. I think he's done everything he needed to do and he's doing it and this is a star ascendant.
Oh, 100%. Now, yeah. I know you talked about a little bit about Bo Bichette and some things that he might be able to do differently. I think so far in 2021, we're seeing a lot of the same things that Bo Bichette can do. And I talk about elite, you know, bat-to-ball skills, but also a guy who's hyper-aggressive to the point that you made a good point in your story with Caitlin earlier this year, that the kind of thing that could get him into a bit of trouble as he gets older.
Yeah, it's not a great reach rate. He's improved it from last year when it was like among the league's worst. You know, mm-hmm. The first 2 years, he swung at like 45% of the pitches he saw outside the zone. And that's just not a good way to go about business because your ability to make contact on pitches outside the zone is almost directly tied to your athleticism. Mm-hmm. As soon as your athleticism starts to go down, you just, it's like wrists, you know, it's like when you see someone hit a ball out when they opened up too early and they're in the tank, you know what I mean? And, mm-hmm. and like, they don't do that when they're old. They kind of do that when they're young and powerful and like, they just wrist it out, you know? Mm-hmm. Making contact on pitches outside the zone is one of the things that ages the worst in baseball. So I'm happy to see that he made some improvement, but it's not great. It's still among the league's worst. I have to say that I'm not sure about the longevity, especially since you're already starting to see a slightly higher strikeout rate. So I wonder if, you know, once he gets to 28, 29, 30, the other side of 30, he might be a guy that has sort of 30% strikeout rates, even though he showed such great ability putting bat to ball in the minors and in his early career. It's just not a good idea to reach that much as pitches outside the zone.
I want to ask you real quick. I don't know that I prepped you for this as much, but I know as someone who used to watch the Mets really closely, you've probably seen a lot of Steven Matz. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen much of him since he's come to Toronto. Obviously, the results have been really great. Thrown a lot of strikes, which is just kind of like never a bad way to go, never a bad plan. But if you're a Blue Jays fan, is this something you can maybe get legitimately excited about? Or is it, or if you're thinking about Steven Matz kind of regressing, is it we're going to see him start to lose that command and be a bit more wild as the season progresses?
I'm not as convinced. You're not going to get a Vlad Guerrero gushing here.
We're not going to start like bringing Warren Spahn and Randy Johnson. Not quite one of those guys.
In fact, but the one thing I will say is, I do think he has about league average command. So I think that he will go the way of his command. So if they have him. Like sort of attacking places where his command is at his best, you know, if they have, like when you saw Tyler Glasnow's command hasn't really improved in Tampa Bay. It looks like it has because his walk rate has, but they've just told him to pitch to the middle of the zone, you know, and they're like, mm-hmm. Your stuff is so good, just pitch to the middle of the zone. I don't think you can tell Steven Matz that. So I'm sure that they've told him, just keep this up and keep this low and don't worry about side to side or something like that, you know? So maybe they've gotten something out of him that way. But I'm doing my pitching ranks right now. Steven Matz, I have a stuff number based on his, I'm based on the pitch movement and velocity of his pitches. His number right now is 82, where 100 is average. And so he comps, who's he comp with? Sean Manaea, who's been having some okay results, but I don't know that you'd bet on them to continue forever, mm-hmm. Is somebody that's right there. Nick Margavicius. I'm really bad at names. I'm sorry.
household names like Nick's, I'm surprised. Yeah. just synonymous with high quality left-handed. Cliff Flexen. You wrote on him about having a new pitch, so maybe that's
so. I mean, the one thing that Matz does is he has four pitches, but I just don't think the breaking balls are quality though.
Mm-hmm.
So the changeup is his only above average pitch. I don't know if he can throw it much more than he's getting closer to a third. Sinkers are not around the game or being devalued, and his sinker is only about average, even though he throws it kind of hard. So I don't see it continuing. But the one thing that they do need is just innings.
Yeah.
You know? And some of the hope, I think, with Matz is just to be a bridge. Like in the same way that the Rays got, you know, Waka and all these guys, they're hoping to kind of hand off the ball if they decide Rich Hill is toast, which, you know, the decision may be coming any day, then, you know, they're hoping that they can hand the ball to McClanahan or Honeywell or one of their young guys and go from there. So I think the Jays are doing the same thing, right? They're just hoping Matz is good enough long enough that, you know, Pearson gets healthy and Simeon Woods Richardson, you know, takes a step forward. Kay's looked a little bit better, you know? So like, they're just hoping that these guys give you enough innings before the young guys step in.
More Spin Rate coming up right after these words from our sponsors.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't want to take too much of your time. I know you've got a busy place at your house, and we already spoke about Kevin Biggio, and what we do not need is another podcast in which we run down the good baseball name of Kevin Biggio. But I do want to ask you about what your summer, what's it like right now for you? You know, someone who spends so much time in the visiting clubhouse, so much time trying to get out and talk to players, to kind of marry this sort of research and the analytical work that you do with these kind of chats and getting to know players and getting some really fun stuff. How is this working out for you so far this year?
Oh, it's been terrible. I mean, I rely on going into the clubhouse for ideas. I rely on it for feedback. I rely on it. I used to do stories where I talked to a player about how his pitch mix has changed. It used to be my favorite sort of easy story that I think people liked reading of mine. And like, I can't really do that. Like I've quit attending player Zooms.
Yeah.
I just quit because I get one question. I don't get a follow-up. I don't get to do, usually what I do is, did you know that you're got like the highest slider whiff rate in baseball or something like that? You know, I'd always come with like some sort of, you know, fluff them up factoid, you know, get them talking. And then, you know, 20 minutes later, I've got a whole thing on their piece. You know, that's how I managed to do that piece about Sonny Gray and the Yankees and everything, you know, and spring training was the worst, not being able to go and do my yearly Votto where like I could just sit down with him and just ask him what he's thinking about, you know,
push report on the player and then just like story.
I never worked hard on the Votto pieces, you know, like they were just so easy. So I'm really hoping to get my second shot soon. Awesome. I'm really hoping that more and more teams get that 85% threshold. I'm hoping that at least they'll open up. There's been some talk about opening up to maybe on the field you know, outdoors kind of discussions with players. It still requires a little bit, like the one thing that I love to do was prepare for a couple players, but also just be prepared to just talk to some people I knew and just talk and just be kind of, and it's a little bit different to be like, PR, can you go get, you know, blah-de-blah and blah-de-blah for me? And then there's always like this, I could, but you know, you're not like, you're not, I can or anything. So I don't think you can get him.
One of the sometimes the stuff that I would get that I like the best was when I would be talking to one guy and there's somebody else would be there and they're kind of chopping it up or they're kind of just like offering, their 2 cents. I remember I was talking to Miguel Cabrera and, oh my God, I can't believe his name has escaped me. And he was there and they were kind of joking. And then he pulled me aside, but I asked him something and he's like, he's the best I've ever seen. Like there's nobody who's anywhere close. And he gave me like something really specific about Miguel Cabrera that Cabrera is not going to say himself other than the fact that like he did.
That's another
like,
thing. Oh, come on.
Like,
if you can't get a player to say, you know, exactly what you wanted or what you needed, like then you go to the other players and like that or the coach and stuff. And this, like Zoom, everybody sees you coming a mile away. If you get a good quote, everybody else is writing it down and using it in their story. You know what I mean? Like I never liked the scrum and I don't want to be a part of it. So, I'm hoping. And then, you know, one of my favorite stories of all time, Adam Dunn is behind Brandon Moss and I'm interviewing Brandon Moss about, and he's being super upfront about having a hole at the top of a swing, which is amazing because it's really important for today's baseball. Like I go back and read that. I'm like, whoa, there's a lot of players like this because Brandon Moss wanted to launch the ball. And all he did was hit homers for a while. And then people figured out that he had a big hole at the top of his zone because he had an uppercut swing. And I'm like, wow, this is like, you know, this is great stuff. You're being really honest with me. And he's like, yeah, I try to lay off it. But if they did, if the guy can hit three times high and away, like I tip my cap to them and it's a strikeout, you know? And he's talking about like trying to get out of a slump and all this stuff. It's so great. And Adam Dunn is in the background just clowning, just being a total ass, really. But it was so funny. I mean, you know, at some point Brandon Moss says like something about Ruben Amaro Jr. And Adam Dunn's like, who's that? And Brandon Moss is like, my GM. And Adam Dunn goes, GMs don't matter. And Brandon Moss says, it does if you're in the minor leagues and you want to make the major league team like I was.
<That's>
Did
awesome.
You hear the rest of the story I was telling? And like Adam Dunn is just like, he said at one point, hit home runs, line drives will follow, which is not only a great Adam Dunnism, but also maybe relevant to today's baseball.
Adam Dunn, 100% ahead of the game, ahead of the track.
Exactly.
I want to say it was Ramon Santiago was the guy that I was talking to.
Oh,
he was
nice.
Great.
Yeah.
Now, knowing that this is going to be, has been a rough season, well, the last thing I'll ask you for, what kind of beer are people going to be drinking this summer?
Oh, well, I did a really cool collaboration in Chicago with, and it's funny, I didn't, this is funny to Toronto listeners. I forgot about Ephus Brown Ale from left field. And I called it Ephus, but it's a hazy pale ale. And that's what I'm hoping we see more of because I'm putting on the pounds. I'm running, trying to get rid of those pounds. if you can give me a hazy pale ale at 5% alcohol, most of the calories in beer come from the alcohol.
Okay.
So if you can give me a hazy pale ale, Cellar Maker makes some good ones out here. Like then I'm getting the taste. It feels like I'm having like a hazy IPA and it's great, but it's only 5%. So it's fewer calories. So that's what I collaborated on. And I'm hoping that I'm sure there's some Toronto breweries that will take part in this. I'm hoping to cause a little bit of a mini trend here, but you know, it's a hard thing to pull off because, you know, haziness covers the alcohol and usually you think of a hazy double IPA even, but hazy single pale, that's what I'm hoping to drink more of this summer.
The good people at Left Field absolutely kill it, and they've been pushing out so many really cool offerings.
Apologies to them.
Yeah, I'm sure that it's all in the game. It's all
if
in the game.
If you want to collaborate I'll do a different name.
they have a West Coast Swing IPA, but it has a bit of a higher alcohol comment. So so maybe not the one for you. The Gigante is a new one. Maybe you can check that one out. Crisp and light. But, nice. Eno, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. I said in the intro before you and I were on, we've been doing this for almost 10 years. You and I are close to it. We've been popping on, having you on a million different podcasts. Every single one I really enjoy. So thank you so much for taking the time. It's been great.
Yes. Once again, apologies for some of the scheduling mishaps, but had to make sure I got on with you, and it was a pleasure as always.
Awesome. Eno Saris of The Athletic. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this show. Listening this week, listening to the two episodes a week that we do now. I want to recommend that you go back and read Eno's story with Ken Rosenthal about all the shit that they're putting on the ball. Go back through the archives a little bit, read a couple weeks ago when he's writing about the new ball, some of the conclusions he spoke of. And of course, you can go back and read the story that he wrote before the season with Caitlin, all about what some of the Blue Jays players needed to do to really start to hit the ground running and become their truest selves here in 2021. And I think that a couple of them are definitely on the way. Some obvious room for improvement for some of those guys. And as usual, you can, of course, go and read everything that Caitlin writes. Caitlin, co-host of Spin Rate, would be nowhere without her here in 2021. And if you want to do all those things, you got to go to theathletic.com/spinrate to subscribe, get yourself a nice little discount, and then, of course, let them know that we sent you. If you want to sign up for my Vladimir Guerrero Jr. newsletter, you can do that at fairservice.substack.com. It's a lot. It's pretty easy to write when all he does is get hits and he gets on base 3 and 4 times a night. Also, one thing I will shout out, Caitlin did a great story on Vlad Jr. this week, so go read that. Sign up for the podcast, sign up for the newsletter, and then sign up for the podcast, wherever it is that we do get our podcasts. There's all these different ones now. I don't know what they are, but sign up. Hit us with a review. But for Caitlin, who's not here during the week, for Eno, who you can follow on Twitter at Eno Saris, my name is Drew Fairservice, and we will talk to you again soon on Spin Rate.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.